Welcome, everyone, to our Kentucky Live program at West Kentucky University Campus Library. We're glad you're able to join us for an entertaining and exciting event. The Kentucky Live is a literary event that was started by Dr. Dean Coutts and Professor Peggy Wright. The program hosted by Western Kentucky University and sponsored by Friends of the WKU Libraries focuses on the authors and topics by and about Kentucky. The first program, which discussed two historically African-American communities in Bowling Green, began 11 years ago in February 2002 as a companion to the Faraway Places. Right now, I would like to acknowledge our two dignitaries tonight who graciously decided to join us. We have Chancellor Dr. Sally Ray all the way in the back. And Mr. Bill Walter, Assistant Director of the Glasgow campus as well. Thanks for coming. They had a long day today, so we really appreciated that they stopped by to join us. The next speaker will be Dr. Brian Kuntz. Dr. Kuntz's accomplishments are long and varied. Dr. Kuntz is the head of the Department of Library Public Services of Western Kentucky University. He is the co-author of several books, which are The Reference Sources in History, An Introductory Guide, and World Bibliographical Series. His Historical Dictionary of Beliefs will be coming out soon. He has published articles in the Library Journal since 1997. He has received various awards such as the WKU Academic Services Award for research three times. In addition, he has received both the Who's Who in the World and Who's Who in America awards twice. I present Dr. Kuntz.
Well, thank you very much for those kind words, and it's a pleasure to see you here tonight. I just want to acknowledge some of the people who make this series possible, our friends of WKU Libraries, our benefactor, our genial host here at WKU Glasgow, our technician, Eric Fisher, working back there with the camera. Ryan Dowell and Christopher McConnell designed our posters. Our speaker tonight is a native of Horse Cave, Kentucky. He attended Temple Hill Elementary School before graduating from Barron County High School. Growing up in Barron County, he recalls that his uncle was an entrepreneur who would flip meat all day long. When he would visit his uncle, he would be given chores to do, and then his uncle would reward him with smoked meat. And thus began his fascination with barbecue, or meat cooked with smoke. He received a bachelor's degree in English from Western Kentucky University before entering the Graduate School in Language and Literature at the University of Mississippi in 1994. He received his MA and PhD in English in 2000 while cultivating an interest in the study of literature and the environment, and publishing essays and short stories in a variety of journals from the Crescent Review to the Southern Quarterly. He's taught English at Rockford College in Illinois before returning to his alma mater, where he's presently an associate professor and coordinates the Robert Penn Warren Center. He teaches classes on Kentucky and Southern literature. His current interest in foodways, especially unique regional cuisines, and he says he often arranges his courses around food-related themes. I wish I could have taken one of those courses. With a desire to bring greater recognition to the state's fine barbecue tradition, he began a three-year quest, which has involved visiting more than 160 of the state's barbecue, shacks, joints, restaurants, and festivals, and culminated in his recent book, Kentucky Barbecue, published this year by the University Press of Kentucky. He's recently become host of a TV show on WBKO, which showcases great food from some of the region's mom-and-pop restaurants. When not teaching or writing or eating, he and his wife are cultivating a diverse homestead on the land between the green and barren rivers. And please welcome Kentucky's very own Guy Fieri. Wes?
Yeah, I wish I had Guy Fieri's money. Not his actual money, but anyway. You know, I remember sending you some bio notes, but I don't remember it being that extensive. I think you padded that some. I'm delighted to be here. I want to thank the same people who you already thank, so I won't be repetitious. But y'all, thank you. And to the crowd, thanks for coming. This is like old home week for me. In high school, I practiced football right over here on what is now, I think, the baseball diamond of Barron County High School. And we used to, in those hot, sweltering summer days, smell the chicken plant, which was right over here. It made for a really nice football practice, you know. Chicken guts and hot, steamy Southern Kentucky bashing heads. Yeah, so what I normally do during these talks is talk off the top of my head, much as I do in my classes, but I've decided to be a little more orderly this time. I will answer any questions you have about Kentucky barbecue or philosophy, nature of the universe, etc. If you have any questions about the slideshow that I have, raise your hand and I'll pause and I'll explain what you're looking at on the screen. But the short of it is, back in 2009, I got the silly idea that I would eat at every barbecue place in Kentucky and then, well, maybe write a book about it. And 4 years later, I've eaten at 173 places now, and I earned the name Professor Pork Belly. By the way, I feel like this is kind of vibrating a little bit, but is it okay? All right, good. So, why do this? Well, I think I'll just start reading a little bit, and I think I explained it here in the Kentucky Barbecue book. So I begin with a quote from Brother... Oh, before I forget, the Lowe's are in the audience, and Jimmy Lowe here was my high school English teacher, and he's one of the earliest people to inspire the great word, the pursuit of the great word of language and literature, and thank you so much for coming. It is a joy. Mr. Lowe dressed up as he did his Jesse Stewart. I won't call it a routine, but his performance, his Jesse Stewart performance in class one time, and I still remember that. And now, I think then you probably had to dye your hair, but you no longer have to do that. All right, so I have an epigraph to the book from the good poet Walt Whitman. I am large, I contain multitudes of barbecue. If you've read his poem, Song of Myself, you realize it's a slight riff on his original. I've been diagnosed with hyper-enthusiastic barbecue disorder, HEBD. I'm supposed to drink 8 ounces of KC Masterpiece daily to make the cravings go away. The prescription isn't working very well. I still get the nervous trembles when I think about deliciously smoked meats. But I do know this, I'm not fond of KC Masterpiece and many other major brand sauces, thick concoctions sweetened with corn syrup and sometimes tainted by unnatural tasting liquid smoke. Monroe County. My students sometimes tell me that their lives are so busy it's difficult for them to turn in work on time. They ask for extended deadlines. And I say, you think you've got it bad. I've got HEBD. I can't even concentrate on what you're saying right now. In the book I write, Sniff Sniff. Is that the smell of pig flesh cooking over wood smoke? You don't even know distraction until you've got HEBD now. Glue yourself to a chair and finish that essay. Now, if you know anything about publication, you know that there's a copy editor who got a hold of my manuscript before the final version came out. And, you know, I wasn't too naughty in my book, but occasionally I said something that the copy editor, guided by the press, thought might be controversial. And in confessional mode here, in my original draft, I said, some of my students tell me they have ADHD. and that keeps them, prevents them from finishing their papers on time. So I came up with this thing called HEBD. And the copy editor said, that might offend some people who have ADHD. Get that out of there. So there you go. So it's a much nicer version, cleaner version now. This is being taped, so now everybody knows. I go on to explain after that little short introduction that one of my inspirations for writing this book was being a proud Kentuckian and being disappointed that when I watched the Travel Channel and the Food Network and they would have shows on America's Best Barbecue, they never mentioned Kentucky. They would talk about Kansas City, Memphis, Texas, and North Carolina. Never Kentucky. And I thought, well, how come? I know we have a good barbecue here. I grew up here. I grew up eating Monroe County sliced shoulder. Surely we have more than that. I found out that we do. You can see the photo, the proof's right here. That's part of my ambition for writing this book. Also, I've traveled around a good bit. I've been to all of our states except for Rhode Island. I've eaten, I saved the smallest for last. And I've eaten barbecue in many of them. And I've had barbecue here in my home state as good as I've had anywhere. So I go on to explain that when I was traveling to Florida a few years ago, I stopped by a place in Georgia that was famous for having awesome barbecue. Fresh Air Barbecue, just south of Atlanta. And what I had there was good. But it was a smallish amount, and it wasn't as smoky as I like. And I thought, okay, well, I can tell people where they can find barbecue superior to what I had down there in Georgia. So here's a section called On the Road to a Comprehensive Tour of Kentucky Barbecue. I've wanted to write a book on Kentucky's best barbecue since moving back to the green rolling hills. All right, here, let's pause here. All right, so I gained 25 pounds in writing this book-ish, 25 pounds-ish. And this is what I thought was the end of my barbecue journey. A couple years ago, my friend Kristen Land took that photo of me after a meal at Dave's Sticky Pig in Madisonville. I think I was pooching it just a little bit for effect, but the truth is, you know, I was pregnant with barbecue. All right. So I wanted to write this book since moving back to the green rolling hills of cave country in 2005. Having sojourned for a while in the barbecue wastelands of the Midwest, my goal was simple enough: eat at every barbecue place in the Commonwealth and write a travel guide to direct readers to the best, describing and rating the food along the way. After hitting the road in the summer of 2009, I soon realized the challenges of describing smoked meats, potato salad, beans, slaw, and sauces dozens and dozens of times without sounding like a broken record. How many words are there to describe the essential qualities of good barbecue? Tenderness, moisture, and smokiness. I started boring myself pretty quickly when listening to my digital voice files from those early trips. My methods were simple enough. I would go into a place anonymously and take my little digital voice recorder with me. And as I ate, I would make notes and I would try to be inconspicuous, which is sometimes difficult. I remember I ate at a place in Louisville, in Ferndale, I think, and it was hot. I was on my way up to a canoe trip in Minnesota, and I think it was 114 degrees that day, heat index, when I was driving through Indiana in my Ford Ranger, which had no air conditioning. But on the way up, I thought, I got to get at least one barbecue place in. So I stopped at this place in Louisville, and I was the only idiot sitting outside in that 114 degree day, because I wanted, it was a small little place, and I didn't want to be sitting there taking my digital voice notes of people looking at me. So I sat outside so I could give an honest assessment of the food. As I traveled more widely, I discovered that the stories of the people I met added depth or flavor that complemented my descriptions of the food. By the way, I'm actually seeing now, I look down occasionally. My wife and I raised a couple pigs 2 years ago. Red Bud and Short Timer. And this is the rib, well, these are the pork chops here. The uncut up pork chops, I suppose, of one of them. These pigs were slaughtered in Barron County down at Joe Michael Moore's place. And we learned a whole lot about hogs from cutting up these pigs. I also think it's fun to say that my wife grew up Jewish, and so she's a Jewish woman who helped me butcher hogs, and she loves pork. Amen. Yep. it was a requirement. I had it written in the prenup thing that if she ever decided not to eat pork, it's over. I think of Kentuckians as a particularly rooted people, proud of their land and lands and customs. And touring the Commonwealth from the Mississippi River to Appalachia and most parts in between has reinforced this sense of pride in place. And no wonder. Kentucky is gorgeous, blessed with thousands of miles of freshwater streams. Did you know, according to the book Rivers of Kentucky, that we have more navigable miles of waterways than any other state except Alaska? That includes, of course, the impoundments, the big land between the lake impoundments and Cumberland River impoundment and all the streams and rivers. But that's just amazing. I feasted my eyes on fields of corn and soybeans, weathered tobacco barns, grass-covered roller coaster hills, pastures dotted with rows of fresh hay and cattle. I stood on the banks of the Ohio River at Paducah, Uniontown, and Maysville watching the water roll and admired the sailboats on Kentucky Lake. I fell in love with the state all over again, and I've tried to capture a sense of the regional landscapes and local customs in these pages. I began my tour of Kentucky barbecue in the western part. That's banana pudding from Old Hickory in Owensboro. I began my tour of Kentucky barbecue in the western part of the state, the mecca of smoked meats. Native Kentuckians identify with counties, right? As in, I'm a native of Barron County. Ask someone from Chicago where they're from, and they don't say Cook County. But ask a Kentuckian, especially one from a sparsely populated area, and as you know, most of the state's pretty sparsely populated, and you'll likely get an answer that includes a county name. Perhaps this is because we have so few big cities in Kentucky, only four with populations over 50,000. But our medium-sized state is divided into a whopping 120 counties. So I tried managing my barbecue research by making a county-by-county list from west to east and then checking the Yellow Pages for listings of restaurants or shacks that look like they might serve barbecue. I also asked for recommendations from acquaintances across the state, and I called real estate offices whose business is to make the customer happy, asking for their local recommendations. By the way, I also called Chamber of Commercers, the offices of Chambers of Commerce, not helpful. Why? Because they will only give you advice if you advertise or if you're a member of the chamber, and most of these little mom-and-pop barbecue places are not members of the chamber, so no help there. And I called some sheriff's departments, thinking, okay, you know, cops will drive around eating donuts and barbecue. Surely they'll have some good recommendations, but they were a little suspicious as this dude was calling asking for about barbecue. But the real estate people were very helpful. Then I set out in my old trusty, rusty Ford Ranger to try the meats and to find them at least good to interview the pit tenders and owners to learn about their cooking methods and history and barbecue. By the way, at the beginning of my book, I dedicate it to my wife, adopted Kentuckian and Jewish pig farmer, and to my uncle Roy Eason Williams, he's to his memory, because he's the one who used to, as you noted in the intro, feed me meat all day long after I hauled in wood for him or whatever else he wanted me to do. And then I have an in memoriam for my Ford Ranger here, 1991 to 2012. My truck kicked the bucket when I was doing my tour one day and had to have it towed back to Warren County. So, I am going to give you a little history of Kentucky barbecue here from the introduction in just a little bit. This is an abbreviated history of Kentucky barbecue. And God said, "Let the earth bring forth the living creature after his kind, cattle and creeping thing, and beast of the earth after his kind," and it was so. Then cattle, hogs, sheep, and other delicious things made of meat appeared on earth. I should be careful. This is God's country here. Fast forward a few years to when Kentuckians, living when the United States was young, cooked God's creatures over fire and shared the smoky gifts at big celebratory socials. Virginians had squeezed through Cumberland Gap and brought with them into the Great Meadow, an early nickname for Kentucky, some barbecue know-how. One citizen of the Young Republic, bird painter John James Audubon, who ironically killed creatures he loved in order to paint them, wrote about a 4th of July barbecue he observed in Kentucky in the early 1800s. He writes, "The free, single-hearted Kentuckian, bold, erect, and proud of his Virginia descent, had, as usual, made arrangements for celebrating the day of his country's independence. The whole neighborhood joined with one consent. No personal invitation was required, where everyone was welcomed by his neighbor, and from the governor to the guider of the plow, all met with light hearts and merry faces. Now the wagons were seen slowly moving along under their loaded provisions, which had been prepared for the common benefit. Each denizen had freely given his ox, his ham, his venison, his turkeys, and other fowls. Here were to be seen flagons of every beverage used in the country. The melons of all sorts, peaches, plums, and pears would have been sufficient to stock a market. In a word, Kentucky, the land of abundance, has supplied a feast for her children." And he goes on. Barbecue, according to Audubon's account, is cooked by the people, for the people, a communal food well befitting a commonwealth. I see here the early makings of the great community barbecues of present-day Western Kentucky, the summertime picnics hosted by Catholic churches, for example, of which I say more later in the book. Talking about copy editing, in an early version of this book, I grew up in this area where you can throw a rock and hit a Protestant church, but there's the one little Catholic church sitting right over here, right next to the Behemoth Baptist Church. And, you know, I knew, I've always passed by that little Catholic church and thought, what are they doing in there? So I've made some jokes in an early manuscript about, you know, the Catholics being inside worshiping the Pope and stuff like that. And turns out that one of the readers of my manuscript was a devout Catholic from northern Kentucky, and she did not get my jokes. So when I finally met her one day, she said, you know, Catholics do not worship the Pope. That is a misconception. I said, I know it's a misconception. It was a joke. But again, if people don't know you, they may not get the jokes. What I did find out, traveling around the state, was that the Catholics loved to smoke up God's creatures. And the big Catholic picnics of Owensboro, Davis County area, wow, you know, I went to those things and saw people smoking up 7,000, 10,000 pounds of meat at the largest fancy farm. When I went there, I think they cooked 17,000 pounds of meat that day, 10,000 pounds of pork, 9,000 pounds of sheep. It was an impressive sight, and I've got some photos of that in here. So, folks, the bulk of the book is made up of you had 115 descriptions of my favorite barbecue places, at least places that ranked at least good on my good radar. And I explained at the first of the book what I like. I like tender meats. I like smoke. I like spice. I don't like my barbecue gooped up with sauce. And I learned that in Appalachia, people like a little bit of meat with their sauce. They're saucy barbecue-eating people over there, and there aren't many barbecue places in the mountains. I also learned that up there around Maysville, northern Kentucky area on the Ohio River, saucy-loving people up there. But in West Kentucky, you can go to a place like this right here. This is the Hoggy Sandwich from Mr. Barbecue in Grand Rivers, Kentucky, Land Between the Lakes area. That's a half pound of long smoked pork on a hoagie bun, and he smokes his pork shoulders for 24 hours. Very different from the tradition of meat grilling that you get here in the five counties in South Central Kentucky, where shoulder means sliced Boston butt grilled over hickory coals for a short amount of time. You can't see this if you're in the back, imagine, but I drew out a little regional barbecue map and had a cartographer make it look professional. And you can, this is basically Interstate 65, and almost all the barbecue, I'd say 80% of the barbecue in the state, is west of Interstate 65. Here's where we are: Barron, Warren, Allen, Monroe, and Cumberland. those are the only counties where you can get the Monroe County style, those thin slices of Boston butt grilled over hickory coals like you get here. And I say if you go into, you know, a barbecue place west of here and you order shoulder, they're not going to know what you're talking about. Well, they're going to know what you're talking about, but they're going to think it's a whole pork shoulder smoked for 15 to 30 hours for a long period of time and then pulled apart, pulled pork. Here we have something that's kind of like pulled pork, and they call it shredded, and it's a saucy mess, and I don't like it too much. So if your tastes align with mine, if you like tender meats that are nicely smoked where you can still taste the meat, then you'll probably like the recommendations that I give you in this book. At dinner tonight, my friends and I were talking about accents, and some of the folks in this room ain't from here, and they've picked up on our particularly unique way of talking. And I actually have a section of the book called Kentucky's Curiously Spoken Place Names. I have these little sidebars, what I call side dishes in the book, where I wanted to say something that didn't really fit into a regular narrative of a barbecue place. So I promised these folks I would share this one. So I was eating at Mama Lou's Barbecue in Juneau one day and talking with owner Gerald Judd when I asked him a question about the history of the little rural bird, pronouncing it Uno. And he smiled and answered my question by calling it Uno. Any of you all ever want to call it Uno?
No,
yeah, did you ever want to call it Uno? That's right, you grew up hearing it as Uno, right? Do you know Miss Lindsay Buckingham Bird?
She's my cousin.
All right. We did a little TV show with Mama Lou's, and I met Miss Lindsay Buckingham Bird when we did that show, and she's sweet. Kentucky offers a wonder of creative takes on the English language. We especially love twisting European names into our own Kentucky brand of English. I grew up near the rural community of Etoile, Etoile, in southern Barron County. Now, étoile is a French word meaning star, pronounced by the French as étoile or something like that. Locals, of course, pronounce it Etoile. I've heard some call it Etoile, but that final syllable comes out more like oil than oil. Speaking of which, my Uncle Terry once had car trouble in New England. He walked into an auto parts store and asked for a quart of oil. As in, I need a quart of oil. The guy behind the counter just looked at him quizzically. And Uncle Terry tried again. No luck. He tried slowing down. He said, quart of oil. The New Englander still didn't get it. About that time, someone else walked up to the counter and ordered oil. My uncle, I spell it OY-YULL, oil. My uncle caught on and he asked for a quart of oil, thus completing his transaction. No surprise, but Kentuckians refer to Versailles, the French named town west of Lexington, as Versailles. And there's a spot in the road in southern Grayson County named Moutardier. Locals call it Moody Deer. It's spelled, the French words are devilish. It's spelled M-O-U-T-A-R-D-I-E-R, Moody Deer. In Hart County, there's a place on the Green River spelled R-I-O, as in the Rio Grande. What do the locals call it? Rio. Seriously. I love these revisions of proper pronunciations. In all fairness, it's the devilish French words that cause the most trouble. Sometimes Kentuckians do get it right, however. In Evanston County, you'll find the community of Chalybeate. For the life of me, I figured people would pronounce this place Chalybeate, but they don't. They pronounce it Chalybeate, real close to the dictionary's directions. Brian, how long have I been going, my friend? Okay, well, the last thing I'll do is share one of my write-ups for you. I chose one from Glasgow. Just kidding, Glasgow, since that's where we are. And from the Glasgow section, the book is laid out by towns. I got the barbecue place in here. That's out on Highway 90. I got the barbecue hut. And then I wrote about South Fork Grill. And South Fork Grill contributed their vinegar slaw recipe to me. By the way, there are over 30 recipes in the book. I went to my favorite places and requested them. And some people were generous enough to share some. Many people declined. Can't give those secrets away, you know. In the late 1980s, a place called Granny's served up the first Monroe County-style shoulder I'd eaten outside of Tompkinsville. Do any of y'all remember Granny's? All right. One person in the room. Woo! Located close to two major factories, Eaton Axle and R.R. Donnelly & Sons, a commercial printer where I worked right out of high school for 5 years. Granny saw a lot of lunch business. I worked in the press room. Well, all right, I'm going to quit riffing off my own writing because then I'm going to tell you the same thing I just said. I worked in the press room at Donnelly's right out of high school. And back then, I often washed my ink-stained hands and rushed over to Granny's during the lunch hour, getting a sliced shoulder plate dipped hot. It was wonderful, this easy access to Monroe County-style barbecue, the only kind of barbecue I knew other than my Uncle Roy's slow-grilled kielbasas, tenderloins, half-chickens, and sliced pork shoulder. Sally, can you still hear me without this? Wonderful. But then the dark ages came to Barron County when Granny's closed and sat empty for 3 years. My source of regular barbecue fixes gone like a thief in the night. I'd already left my hometown for college when Granny's was reopened by Glenda and Betty Pointer, who changed the name to Barbecue Hut. The newest owners, the Wilsons, have kept the Hut name and continue to serve up pork shoulder cooked on an open pit. They have a very comfortable seating area inside and also a drive-up window. Out back, slabs of hickory and a huge iron kettle for burning down wood to coals, let you know you're in a good place. There's a sawmill nearby on Industrial Drive right in town. No shortage of good smoking hardwoods in this town, settled by Celts. Glasgow hosted the International Highland Games of 2001, and each year, kilt-wearing Scots and long-lost American cousins of kilt-wearing Scots converge at Barron River State Park to toss telephone poles, dance, and listen to good music. I arrived around 3:30 on a Thursday afternoon, and Miss Jenny Wilson, who took my order, said she was hungry. They'd had a big lunch crowd, and she hadn't yet eaten anything for herself. Imagine, she said, working in a barbecue restaurant and being hungry. On my way to the Hut, I passed the First Church of the Nazarene east of the town square in Glasgow, which had a sign by the road that read, "If you think it's hot now, die without Jesus," which really had me hankering air conditioning. I found it inside the Hut, along with nostalgic decor from old television shows like I Love Lucy, and the Andy Griffith Show, and the Three Stooges, a picture of two dancing pigs. Photos of Humphrey Bogart show just how cosmopolitan a barbecue place can be in Glasgow, Kentucky. You can bring your family to dine at the Hut, as the seating is ample, space for probably 50 people, and the atmosphere is super clean. Ceiling fans and air conditioning keep things cool. Every time someone goes to the drive-thru, a doorbell ding-dong goes off. You order at one counter and pick up at another, but I went to the restroom, and when I returned, my shoulder plate was waiting for me at the table I'd chosen by the window. The shoulder with hash brown casserole and cowboy beans was served on a styrofoam plate with plastic fork and two slices of white bread. Everything tasted fresh and homemade. I loved the cowboy beans, which had green pepper and hamburger meat mixed into sauce-baked beans. Y'all had dinner? All right, that's good. I wanted to make you hungry. The hash brown casserole available on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday was salty, but if you like salt as I do, very flavorful and good. By the way, that's a Monroe County dip right there. That's R&S Barbecue in Tompkinsville. Yeah. The shoulder tasted of mild smokiness and came without sauce. You add the hot or mild sauce as you wish from bottles on the table, but the meat tasted good without sauce. A normal plate gets you two pieces of shoulder, or you can get three pieces for an extra charge, a mere 50 cents when I visited. It was a pile of food for the price, $6 in August 2011. The fat on the shoulder was softer than at other local places like Southport Grill, telling me it isn't cooked as long. The mild sauce was, hey, anybody know this guy? This is Joe Michael Moore, who used to teach ag at Barron County High School, and he's my high school football coach one time, and he's the one who helped my wife and I kill her pigs. I should stop interrupting myself. This is a hog killing down by Barron River I went to last year. I'll go talk about more about the food at South Fork Grill. The biggest criticism I've had about the book is that sometimes my details are too much. I had a conversation with Brother Wilson. He sat down at the table with me. When Brother Wilson told me he was a preacher, I said, "Well, looks like the good Lord has blessed your shoulder." A line I'm pretty sure I've spoken before when talking with religious barbecue men. And by the way, there are plenty of them. I met a lot of barbecue preachers on the road. And he had a sense of humor enough to laugh. He bastes and seasons the chickens as they cook. The hamburgers are fresh ground and hand-patted daily, cooked on the same pit, open pit as the shoulder. The smoked Polish sausage is served on a regular hot dog bun, and its popularity is picking up, but shoulder remains the number one seller. While I was talking with Brother Wilson, a familiar-looking man walked in, and Brother Wilson said, "Well, there's Mr. Tompkinsville himself." And the man said, "Yeah, they rolled the doors open and let me out one more time." "This is one of our faithful customers," Brother Wilson told me. "He says he lives in Tompkinsville, but he gets his barbecue in Glasgow here." The man said, "They always say T-ville's got two main industries, car washes and barbecue, but for the best taste in barbecue, guess where I stop and take my food back home with? If you want barbecue that's addictive, stop here." I asked what made his barbecue so addictive. The man said, "You can't find potato salad like this anywhere. The mayonnaise slaw has a flavor that you'll not find duplicated. Then you get into the chickens. It's not hard on the outside, but tender all the way through." I said, "You sound like his best salesman." He said, "I'm a chemist by nature. That's my job. I work out here at Donnelly's doing tests on ink and paper and other chemicals." I said, "That's where I recognize you from. I'm Ken Berry's son, by the way. I worked at Donnelly's for a while." The man introduced himself as Ben Robertson. He said he was the oldest person working in the lab at the magazine factory, and he chalked up his longevity in the printing business to eating barbecue and drinking Monroe County water. "You live forever," he said. "The Lord's been good to me." Before leaving, I tried the potato salad, which was truly superb. A creamy, rich salad of real potatoes, almost like mashed potatoes, with plenty of boiled eggs whipped in with something unctuous, probably butter. The vinegar slaw was really fresh and crunchy with sugar to balance the tart. And yes, the cowboy beans were as good as I've ever had in the baked bean department. When I return to the hut, I'm getting another shoulder plate with tater salad and cowboy beans, one of those Polish sausages, and I surely won't pass on the peach cobbler if Miss Jenny decides to make one. I do go into some detail, I have to admit. But if you're willing to sample the food, you might as well know what you're getting. And I've done the groundwork for you. So I'll close by giving you a little summary of barbecue around the state. Far western part of the state, dominant tradition, whole pork shoulders cooked for a long time over hickory coals. Burn down the wood to coals, shovel those coals underneath the meat, cook on 200 degrees, 220 degrees for a long time. The longer they cook, the more smoky they get, the more water is lost, concentrates the flavor, still tender on the outside, gets a little crusty. Tender on the inside, gets a little crusty on the out. Fabulous. Here, of course, you got your half chickens, your sliced Boston butt grilled over hickory coals, Monroe County style. Love the vinegar dip of Monroe County style. Got a recipe up for it in the book. Simple enough. Lard, butter, vinegar, cayenne pepper, black pepper, salt. That's the basics. And around Louisville, you'll find some beef, some brisket. One place serves beef ribs. And around Owensboro, you got your mutton. 18 places in the state serve mutton, which is sheep that's at least a year old. And I happen to love it. A lot of people don't like it. A little too funky for them. So, I've met a lot of fine people, a lot of characters. I write about them in the book, but I'm done talking, and I'm ready to answer your questions about KYBBQ or whatever else, or any of the photos that you have up here. And again, thanks for coming. What questions do you have?
Can you say a little bit about one of the things you commented in the book about is that the lack of eco-sensitivity among these barbecue places, everybody dishes the stuff up and styrofoam and...
Actually, I just think that my words probably speak better than I can off the top of my head, which are still my words, but these words I've considered the ones I've written down, right? I got a little section called The Ecology of Barbecue. I have a a degree in American literature from the University of Mississippi, and my primary study area was environmental literature, so I've been influenced a lot by people like Wendell Berry, who's a true hero of mine. And, you know, thinking about the environmental sensibility of barbecue, I have this little section. Well, the short version is that it's hard to balance a love of barbecue with ecological sensibility. When I started my journey, I usually asked barbecue people where they got their meats, hoping to find some who bought from local butchers or small-scale hog farms. But after hearing Sam's Club numerous times, I stopped asking the question consistently. So basically, it's not very appetizing, but you know, most of the meat you'll buy in the supermarket comes from confined animal feeding operations, CAFOs, where they pack a lot of animals in. And hey, it's Greg Martin from the Kentucky Headhunters. Yeah, I have been able to meet some famous people because of this barbecue thing, and he's one of them. I got to meet Marianne from Gilligan's Island recently. Yeah. In short, a lot of barbecue places, most places spend a whole lot of time thinking about how to prepare the meat, but not so much time thinking about the meat itself. And I would love it if everybody got their animal flesh from small rural farmers, small-scale rural farmers who had a few pigs, and they all the hogs ran around outdoors and frolicked with the flowers and had lots of fresh air and everything. But unfortunately, that's not the case. And barbecue places often are pretty wasteful as well. In this section, I explain how my wife and I raised our pigs and how much work it was, but also we're still eating the country hams from those hogs, and when we eat that stuff, we know those pigs led good lives. So, yeah.
Other question?
Yes, ma'am. I did get tired of eating barbecue. I never thought that I would. When I first did this, the very first day, I ate at 7 places, and I was sick by the evening. And also, I went back to eat at those places again because I realized that once you eat it more than 2 or 3, your judgment gets flawed or skewed. And so, yeah, in my latter days of doing this project, I would eat at 1 or 2 places in a day and not 6 or 7. I would absolutely get sick of eating barbecue, but then I would want it a week later. Yeah, good question.
Did you have any, after the bubble, did you have any
thanks for asking. So you can do the math. There are 115 places, which includes shacks, joints, restaurants, church picnics, and barbecue festivals. And I've been to 170 plus. So that many didn't make the cut. Originally, I had an appendix in the back where I listed every place that I'd been to. So it said places I'd been to but not reviewed. And my wife said, why do you want to include that in there? That's just going to hurt somebody's feelings. So anybody who's in the book, they at least know, even if I was critical of something, that I at least thought them good enough to put in the book. Mostly I've had thank yous from people for... I've had thank yous from people for the publicity. Yeah? And especially, you know, in case you don't know this, if you want to see some of the Kentucky barbecue shows that we've done with the TV program that I'm doing down in Bowling Green, you can go to YouTube, type in WBKO Go Local, and you can see a show on Mama Lou's Barbecue in Juneau and some Monroe County barbecue places and a place that we did in Hopkinsville. So you can see that I've been trying to represent the different styles from around the state. Yes, young lady? Maybe she doesn't have a question after all. I thought you did, though.
Other question? Maybe a little comment about Purdue, which is so successful.
Sure. By the way, what you're looking at right here, this is 7-something pounds of mutton being cooked up at a Catholic church picnic in Uniontown, Kentucky. And Brian just mentioned Burgoo. That's the mutton again. Let me see if I can find a picture of Burgoo. Burgoo is an everything but the kitchen sink stew. It's like Virginia's Brunswick stew, albeit better. This is a picture of, why is it better? Because it's better because it has mutton in it. And mutton gives it a much richer flavor. So this is at Owensboro's wonderfully named International Barbecue Festival. I say wonderfully named because it's an intensely local festival. The same half dozen church teams have been competing against each other for 30-something years. And these are dudes cooking up 70-plus gallons of Burgoo over wood fires, stirring it with these big paddles. So what goes into Burgoo, back in the old days, you threw into it whatever you had. So squirrels, rabbits, etc. But now Burgoo most often has pork, sheep, and corn, and lima beans, and they cook all that stuff down. Some places grind it into slurry. Some places leave it more like a thicker stew. I like both. Some of the best Burgoo you can get is at Old Hickory in Owensboro, in my opinion.
Over here.
Yeah.
Somebody asked me this a couple of months ago, if I raised cattle, and he said, oh, so you must have had a lot of mutton in your grandma. And I said, I'm from Pennsylvania, we didn't eat mutton. And he said, but they didn't understand that it wasn't common. Why is it common here?
I think it's because there a lot of sheep were grown over in that part of Kentucky back in the day. They're not now. Now they're getting the sheep shipped in from Colorado and Michigan. But, yeah, I mean, Catholics, I associate Catholicism with fish on Fridays, right? But not mutton necessarily. But these Western Kentucky Catholics really have taken up the torch of barbecue traditions in this state. I love their big picnics. They have fun in a way that I never had fun in church. Yeah. It's almost as if God wants you to enjoy yourself and eat some good meat. And occasionally, have mercy, drink light beer on church grounds. Oh my goodness.
One more question? Do you have a favorite? You've been through 167 barbecue places. I'm sure you've been asked this before.
I have favorite barbecue places, yes. I intentionally left off a rating system in the book because I wanted people to read my words and not just flip to the 5-star places and read those only. Instead of saying I have a favorite barbecue place, I'll say I have favorite barbecue towns. And those are Owensboro, Hopkinsville, and Graves County over in Mayfield, far western part of the state. Those are super barbecue, concentrated barbecue places. Let me not leave off Tompkinsville for the Monroe County style. And also, Louisville is a surprisingly good barbecue town. I think there are 10 places or something like that in the book from Louisville, 10 or 12. I was surprised. And people are cooking with wood up there. And oh, by the way, you might know this, but you know, for me, for barbecue to be really, really barbecue, it needs to have a smoke element to it. And that comes from cooking over wood. You can get it with charcoal too, but really the more wood the better. These days, because you know, people are growing lazier, folks have manufactured these big gas ovens, and you basically put the meat in there, push a button, put your temperature on it, go home, you sleep. And there's a firebox on the side where you can put a piece of wood on a heating element. The heating element burns that piece of wood, makes smoke. Smoke gets sucked into the gas chamber where the meats are cooking on a rotisserie. You get tender meats, but you don't get an intense smoky flavor unless somebody is there putting a whole lot of wood on that burning element. When you're burning down wood to coals and shoveling them under the meat for 20 hours, it's going to be smoky, no problem.
Is that what we're looking at right here?
That right there is a cooking unit that is perfectly legitimate. It has a firebox here on the side for burning wood, and then the meat goes right here, and this is simply the chimney, although you could this probably has meat in it as well. Now let me show you one of these gas cookers. It's what's that?
Are those homemade?
You mean the one you just saw?
Yeah.
Some of them are manufactured. By the way, here's one of the gas units. you can't see it very well, but stainless steel, and like I say, just imagine a huge industrial size oven. But here's like the real deal. This lady's burning down wood, the coals, and here are the old cinder block pits. The coals go in under here, the meats go up here, it's all nice and insulated. Yummy-licious.
Yeah.
Well, on that note, it's time for our draw for us, and we're going to give away a copy of the book. I'm sure you're pleased to sign it for us.
And oh, yeah.
We'll mix them up. And we'll be get the copy of the book in the back. If you'd like to get a copy, I'm sure you'd be happy to sell you one and sign it. Let you pick one of these.
Okay, here we go. Yeah, by the way, as Brian said, the holidays are coming up. Kentucky Barbecue Book, make a fabulous Thanksgiving present. I'm just messing with you.
Man.
All right, the winner is Johnny Blakely.
Congratulations.
All right. I'm glad that a hungry student can go home with a book. All right. Since we're on the topic since we're on the topic of T-shirts, I have four of these shirts left. I had the minimum order made up because I thought it would be really funny if I were a walking billboard with my own name on my shirt. And I just wanted one, but you had to have a dozen printed up. So I got a medium, two larges, and an extra large, and you can have it for cost. It's a four-color shirt, so these are like $15. It's ridiculous. Anyway, glad to sell you one if you want one of those. Oh, thank you. Oh.
Well, we want to again thank our sponsors, friends of Kentucky Libraries, Gene Lowe's, that we've been in Glasgow, and you for taking time out. We hope you'll join us. Our next program in Bowling Green will be author Billy Rizal. We'll be talking about his latest novel on the 7th of November 14th. So thanks to Drive Home Safely. And again, we have some books to sell back to.
I'll move back to the.
Yeah, sure thing, man. Thanks.
Oh,
what's that?